The last day of the big gathering.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the Morning Open, a look at the economy as trading gets started for the day. A question to start things off, where's Wall Street? Markets are mixed right now. The S&P and the Dow both up, barely. The NASDAQ down about 0.25% right now. European markets mixed as well. And markets in Asia were mostly lower today. The Hang Seng tanked today. President Obama and the leaders of France and Britain are demanding Iran allow international inspectors into a secret nuclear facility. That's the big news out of the G20 summit in Pittsburgh this morning. But now world leaders are getting back to economic issues. Marketplace's Tamara Keith joins us live to talk about it. Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning.
So today's the last day of the summit, and these things always end with some sort of statement from leaders. I mean, we know there's some draft communique that's floating around. What are they planning to say?
Well, there are several big items in this draft. First, the world leaders have decided that global economic policy is going to be set in the G20 rather than the G7 or the G8. And that means that moving forward, countries like China, India, and Brazil will be included in the economic conversation more often. The nations are also pledging to keep economic stimulus measures in place until a recovery takes hold. But they're also apparently working on exit strategy. And the leaders have agreed in principle to make financial regulatory reforms.
And how are those reforms shaping up?
Well, they aren't written yet, but they're saying that by the end of 2012, so 3 years from now, they will have the new rules in place for banks and other financial institutions. They want banks to keep more capital on hand and also want to create incentives to prevent excessive risk-taking and the heavy leveraging that was common in the years leading up to the crisis. And G20 members are also talking about restructuring executive pay at financial institutions, the idea being that they would reward long-term results over short-term gains. And in the past, that's proven risky, the emphasizing short-term results.
Yeah. All right. Marketplace's Tamara Keith joining us this morning. Tamara, thanks.
Thanks.
One thing getting a lot of attention is the future of the International Monetary Fund. European press reports today say Britain and France are upset about an American plan to shake things up at the IMF. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, reports.
The U.S. would like the IMF to reflect the global shift in economic power. It wants to see emerging economies like China and India have a bigger say in the world's main financial body. The IMF oversees the global financial system and bails out countries in trouble. Britain and France had warmly welcomed America's planned reform until they discovered that as a result they would lose their seats on the IMF's board of directors. Graham Mather of the European Policy Forum says it's not surprising the Brits and the French are up in arms.
No country likes to see itself excluded from an international gathering. It's a great blow to national prestige.
But he says the planned downgrade is understandable. Both the Brits and the French wield influence in the IMF out of all proportion to their economic power. They each have more votes than China, while the Chinese economy is now roughly 50% bigger than either of theirs. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's talk a little more about the G20. And we have some other items to mull over this morning as well. Julie Neiman is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Steve.
Let's talk about this this gathering of the group of 20 nations and how important it is for these leaders to leave with some sort of resolution, maybe not formal, but at least some informal resolution. What's going to happen when everyone goes home?
Oh, I think you're going to see a lot of tough talk and very little action. Hopefully, it'll create kind of an atmosphere for reform. But the Europeans are whinging that it's going to put them at a competitive disadvantage. They have to raise more capital than U.S. banks do. But amazingly, all our bad banks had to hold more capital before the crisis than the foreigners do. And look at the disasters they got into. So hopefully, we'll return to those thrilling days of yesteryear when the Lone Ranger had conservative lending practices. But that's still a long ways away.
Let's talk a little bit about some domestic numbers. The durable goods number is out today, down in August 2.4%. I mean, this was a surprise. Does this deflate the bull market, do you think, or is it a fluke that'll go away next month?
Well, a couple of things. First, if you take out the autos, it was basically flat with July, but there's been no significant uptake. Combine this, though, with the weak home sales that we saw yesterday after 4 months of growth, and basically we're seeing that all the special things are gone now. Summer's over. First-time home buyers have already used their $8,000, but what it did do was reduce inventory overhang, both in the durable goods and in housing. So at some point, we will start to see the spirits start to resurrect and start building again and start manufacturing again.
All right, Julie Niemann, have a great weekend.
You bet.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, September 25th, 2009, at Marketplace.org. Millions of Americans are faced with rolling the dice on whether they should lock in the price of heating oil to keep warm this winter. And with the cost of crude going up and down so much, that doesn't make the decision any easier. Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
Suddenly, there are millions of armchair oil speculators wondering if they should commit on their home heating oil at today's price with a pre-buy contract.
It's never a guarantee of what you're going to save. It's a guarantee of what you're going to pay.
Matt Cota heads the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association. He concedes pre-buys ended up burning a lot of consumers who guessed wrong at the end of last summer.
The price of heating oil was $4.25 a gallon, whereas it dipped down to $2 or even less when the bubble burst.
This year, oil analyst Stephen Shork reckons prices should head even lower, but nowhere nearly as much as last year.
You can try and trade this market and get another 20 cents out, and I'm not poo-pooing that, but given the volatility, you know what? This market moves 20 cents in any given day.
Matt Cota tells Vermont Public Radio the odds have favored the early buyer for 13 of the last 15 years.
If you bought in the summer, the price was less than if you bought in the winter. We've had 2 years where the opposite has happened, which is not a bad record.
But this year, with oil cheap and expected to stay that way, analyst Stephen Shork suggests it's a safe bet either way.
Compared to last year, you're ahead of the game.
I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Later this morning, the Pentagon unveils the bidding rules for a $35 billion contract to build 179 air tankers. They're basically flying gas stations. It's the third time the Air Force has tried to buy these planes, but the procurement process has been plagued with problems for years. Here's Marketplace's Steve Henn.
There are only two firms in the world bidding to make these massive flying tankers, Airbus and Boeing. Scott Hamilton is an aerospace analyst for the Lehman Company. He says for Boeing, winning this contract is about protecting its turf.
Strategically, they sure as heck don't want Airbus to have a production facility foothold in the United States.
Boeing executives worry if its European rival wins this bid, eventually Airbus will end up building tankers, freighters, even passenger planes in Mobile, Alabama. Paul Nesbitt, an aerospace analyst for JSA Financial Research, says recently the World Trade Organization ruled the company was improperly subsidized.
They call it launch aid that the European countries have been providing Airbus, several billion for each new aircraft being developed.
But yesterday the Air Force told lawmakers the WTO ruling would not damage Airbus's chances. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
This year has been one of the worst in decades for car sales, and car makers have been doing all they can to kick car buyers' interest into overdrive. So Ford's already trying to generate some buzz for a car that won't be available till sometime next year. And as Elisa Roth reports, it's harnessing the power of the people to sell it.
Would this convince you to buy a Fiesta?
I love it. I love that it's just so small. I love the color. Especially, I like that I chose it's pink. It's connected to my Bluetooth, so I can just talk on the phone.
Ford doesn't pay Jill Hanner to say stuff like that. Or not exactly. She gets to drive the car for 6 months for free, gas included. All she and 99 other Fiesta agents have to do is blog, tweet, and post about their vehicles as much as possible. Jolt Katona studies online marketing and social networks at UC Berkeley's Business School. He says there are three big benefits to Ford's campaign.
The first advantage is the targeting and directly reaching those consumers. The second thing is it generates considerable traditional media attention, like we are talking about now. And this is also kind of a market research tool.
Because like the rest of the world, Ford can read and watch everything the agents post. And as Hanner told me when we were driving in her car, Ford can watch her drive, too.
There's a tracking system on the car, so they always know where we are. And when we enter in our...
So they're following you around.
They are. I try not to think that they're sitting at their desks every, you know, 2 seconds and like, little, where's Jill's car?
In spite of that, or maybe because of it, just about everything the agents say about the cars, online and in person, seems to be relentlessly positive. Katona says that doesn't matter.
The logic goes, the person can say anything, so it's more credible. You can also say that it's more risky, but I think it's more about credibility.
Or credible because it's risky. Somebody could say they hate the car, but an agent could also get drunk and drive into a tree. Katona says the real risk is that Ford's not telling the truth, that the agents aren't really free. If that were true and the public found out, that would really undermine the credibility. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said today that one emergency program that needs to stay in place is TALF. That's the term, Asset-Backed Securities Loan Facilities. TALF works like this. The Fed gives loans to investors, and those investors turn around and use that money to buy securities backed by everything from autos to student loans and credit cards and commercial real estate. Bernanke says the program is essential to help get credit flowing normally.
Since its inception, the TALF has indirectly financed nearly 3 million loans to households, not counting many millions of credit card accounts, and nearly 400,000 loans to small businesses.
The Fed chairman speaking this morning to the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. He says TALF has the potential to generate up to $1 trillion in lending for households and businesses into the next year. Commerce Secretary Gary Locke will be setting up a new Office of Innovation and Entrepreneurship to help jumpstart startups. From the entrepreneurship desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports that some companies are still growing like weeds.
At this week's Inc. 5000 conference, they're celebrating entrepreneurial companies that have continued to expand in spite of the recession. Inc. editor Rod Kurtz.
You hear optimism. They've weathered the storm. And the unique thing about entrepreneurs is that when everyone else is hunkering down, they're out there hiring, trying to drum up new business because they know when everyone else thinks the sky is falling, that's a great opportunity for them.
Many companies on the Inc. list, from insurance to personal fitness, retirement services, and transportation, grew more than 1,000% in 2008.
About 75% of all new jobs in this country are created by small businesses. Keep in mind that most of these companies were founded probably within the past 10 years. These are jobs that literally didn't exist till these companies came along.
Also worth keeping in mind, though, new firms fail at a high rate, and small businesses have been shedding jobs at a rapid pace. So in the short run, it may be tough for entrepreneurs to create enough jobs to lead the way out of recession. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, a car insurance company in Britain says the drivers with the lowest number of claims are farmers, aircraft fitters, and lab technicians. But Churchill Insurance Company says pity the road warriors who share the pavement with computer engineers. The underwriter says they are the motorists with the worst accident records, along with sales managers, chefs, and doctors. No word on where public radio journalists fall, especially the ones driving in Los Angeles in the middle of the night. Hey, check us out online at marketplace.org. You can get our podcast, which is available daily, marketplace.org, and share your thoughts with our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, at our website. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Thanks for being with us this Friday. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.